Welcome to Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. I believe what Ophelia says in Hamlet to be extremely true. We know who we are, but not who we'll be. And I don't think that there is a better or more beautiful example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Quick science lesson, the caterpillar dissolves into its cells, and just when it thinks its life is over, it reforms into the butterfly. That isn't easy, I can't imagine at least, but it's not finished struggling. It has to fight in order for its wings to be strong enough for it to take it everywhere it wants to go once it gets out of the cocoon. None of that can be easy, but neither is busting through limits that society or our family or our friends place upon us. And so today I have Beth with us, and she is going to share about some of the things that she deals with, but she is also going to share with us about the wonderful limits that have been busted through in her lifetime. Before I bring her on, as always, make sure you like, subscribe, and share this. If you are watching live, please give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from in the comments. And if you're catching this in the replay, a hashtag replay and where you're catching it from. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Beth on. Hi, Beth. How are you?
Good, Shelley. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you. Enjoying a beautiful day that was not supposed to be beautiful. It was supposed to be storming all day. So it was a nice change. I love it when the meteorologists get that part wrong.
Yeah, I think actually it's a beautiful hot day here, and I think we are going to get some, and we always have to worry about this down south, we might get tornadoes tonight. So it's always like a dicey evening.
Yep. We have the same thing. I live in Tornado Alley. So anytime during the spring and summer, we always have to seem to have that chance. Yeah. So Beth, tell the audience about yourself. What kind of, your life has been like to this point?
Well, I had a great childhood, and a very strong, family. Not just, my parents, it was my grandparents. I come from, I guess, two of the most iconic kind of families that you can grow up in. One side was Italian, the other side was Jewish. And it was wonderful because the family units were big. And it was always, a 4th of July party or, going to my grandfather's for the Italian Seven Fishes on Christmas Eve. So wonderful, wonderful moments. And to this day, I have not chosen. I love celebrating both of my heritages, and mm-hmm. I pass that on to my daughters. So great childhood. Loved my grandparents. And I lived in New York in Westchester County, which is just north of the Bronx. So basically, we're a bedroom community suburb of New York City. And as a young teenager, I used to go with my friends to Madison Square Garden or Central Park or any of Beacon Theater. And we would go to concerts. I mean, music has always been part of my life since I can remember as a young child. My parents were teenagers, so I had that influence always with music. And then in my mid-teens, because I guess I looked a little older, so at 16, I started going to the clubs.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I was dating a guy, and we are still friends to this day, who was a roadie for the biggest band in that New York circuit. So those guys became my friends, and even the boyfriend ended up being more of a friend than a boyfriend. And so you're thrust into the rock and roll scene, and it's just a club scene. but you meet other people and everybody's vying to be the next big thing, right? The next band that makes it. And then I did have a boyfriend who was in another band, and you get to know all the other bands on the circuit, and it's just a different lifestyle. And when you're younger, it seems, you know, fantastic, and you feel like, okay, you know, anything can happen. I can be in the brink of something big. And I was also going to school, and I did want to sing, and I did not have the self-assurance as a young woman, which I think happens at least in our generation. That I can't speak for the millennials, and I do have three millennials, so their thought process is totally different. But I, you know, was afraid, so it held me back, and I didn't think I was pretty enough, and I didn't. So you can come up with all these reasons why you don't do something, and I did. And then when I was going to school, I said to my parents, well, first of all, I said I wanted to go far away. And my father, being the Italian father, was like, "There's what are you going to need to go away?" And I said, "I want to have a college experience, Dad." And he didn't understand that. So I did go to school locally. But I did move in with my boyfriend at 18. So it kind of was a hard trick for him.
Right.
And, you know, I wanted to act, and my parents are like, "Well, we're not paying for you to go to school to do that." So when you're in that band circuit, there's always people who say you take the straight route, which is doing something that, like going to school and learning a profession, which I did. And, you know, it was business administration. And, you know, people look at you and they call you a sellout. And, but you're still hanging out with everybody. And it's like, no, I'm not a sellout, but I do need to make money.
Right.
Because your boyfriend's not making a lot of money playing in clubs. They get paid in cash. And, you know, I have friends from that era who, you know, none of them paid into Social Security, so they can't collect. They, you know, because it was a different way. And so I worked at one of the, back in the day, one of the big eight accounting firms, and people would think it's boring, but actually I had a great group of guy friends and friends, and we would do a lot of great things. You're in New York City, you go to an Irish bar, you close it down. They would play softball. So my first job was actually a great job. It was fantastic. And I was doing really well. I was being groomed to take the woman who ran the admin part. She was grooming me to take that part. And for some dumb reason, Shelly, I have to say, I did have the boyfriend that I lived with that was in the band moved to Florida. And I said, I don't want to be married at like 19 years old. And I said, you know, I'm staying in New York. You're moving to Florida. It's done. And I was, I don't know why. And this is where you're dumb when you're young, when you're in your 20s, you know, stupid. I started dating somebody. I did not want to date him. And somehow I found myself in this relationship. And he turned out to be abusive.
Sorry.
It was more psychological and verbal. a few times physical, but the other thing, which I don't really like to disclose, but in my books, I do have a part in it. My father was a wise guy. And so if anybody did anything to me, I always knew that I would be protected. And an incident happened and my father called two of his associates and took care of that situation. And, you know, I always grew up knowing as long as my father was around that I was going to be protected. And he made
That's that strong Italian fatherhood, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it was it's a great feeling to have. And then there was, and when I say I worked with a bunch of guys who weren't the typical accountants. And then there was this one guy for 5 years who was trying to get me to date him. And I was like, oh God, no. He was the typical accountant. And I don't know how, I guess it was coming off of a really bad relationship. So you say, I'm going to flip the script and date somebody that I know is safe. Right. And that wasn't necessarily the right thing to do. And the next thing I know, I was in this relationship with somebody who, like, again, I'm like, how did I do that? And he got a job in Honolulu and he came back for 3 months and I thought like the relationship would wean off. And he asked me to move to Hawaii. And, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I love New York. And right. I was like, I don't know what I want to do here. And then the ex-boyfriend started stalking me. I mean, just literally stalking me everywhere I went. And I thought maybe it would be a good idea to go to Hawaii at least for a year and see if things, you know, shook out a little bit. And I did that. And my father gave me it was so sad. I did not want to leave my family. I had three brothers and, you know, my grandparents and just everybody, because it was a tight family. And, you know, Hawaii sounds very sexy to people. And then you live there and it's like living anywhere else. Yes, you could go to the beach at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But you are in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and you're, you know, landlocked. It takes 5.5 hours to get to the West Coast. So I stayed a year. And again, I got a great job at a big advertising agency. And my job was being held open for me in New York. So I had everything set up to go back. And I told this person, I'm probably going to go back. And then I don't know how we got the phone number to my home in Honolulu. And he said, I'll be waiting for you. And that kind of sealed me from saying, I'm not going back. And right. So I got engaged and, had a big wedding in Hawaii, had a big wedding in New York for all the New York family. Mm-hmm. And my father spared no expense, of course. And right before I was going to walk, and I was not, you know, brides get all excited and they're like, yay. Right. I was not. I was more interested that the New York Giants beat the Dallas Cowboys that Sunday. I was watching it at 6:30 in the morning. And my mother and I were getting our hair and makeup. And I said, did you watch the game? I mean, and she's like, you're getting married. And I said, no, the Giants beat the Cowboys. It was great. And his family did not like me. And when you go into a situation where you know your in-laws dislike you, it's probably a big red flag. And I remember my parents telling me, you know, I did not want to get married in the church because of my grandmother. And it was a big roadblock. And my grandmother, she was just so, she was the best person in the world. She said, you know what? I'm not coming to Hawaii. So if your future mother-in-law is making this such a, you know, big deal, just get married in the church. And I said, but I don't. And it wasn't a Catholic church. So I remember being in the bridal room and I had my two friends who were, you know, my bridal attendants. And my mother's like, you know, you don't have to go through with this if you don't want to. And I said, did you take a look inside that church? I said, it's only decorated. And we're having a reception at the most expensive hotel in Honolulu, and it's all set. And my father's like, we could just have a really good party. You don't have to get married. And I walked down the aisle saying, all right, I'm doing this. It's, you know, so you go into a marriage like that. You know, I got to travel. He had a good job. I was working. And then I started, I wanted children. And it wasn't, I wanted children with him so that it was like this, hey, you know, happy. I was ready to become a mother. And so in 5 years, I had three daughters. And
wow.
Yeah, no, that, but I did not find, and my oldest daughter has an 18-month-old. So I get a lot of phone calls now from her. And I was never that mother who was, I didn't feel stressed out. It was something I wanted. So it was a choice I made to become a mother. And when you make that choice, I believe, and maybe not everybody else does, that once you have a child, your life no longer belongs to you in the same sense. And I had three pretty much. And well, after the third one, I said, yeah, no more. I'm not doing this anymore. I was living a life. It was very privileged. And my children went to the best preschool. They went to the school that everybody wanted to get their kids into, and very involved. But the whole time, Shelley, I was like, I don't belong here. I don't belong in Hawaii. I'm a New York girl. And I would spend the summers, my parents moved to Orlando, and I would get on an airplane with my three girls, you know, it could be babies, toddlers, whatever it was, put them on a plane, and we would fly to Orlando and spend the summer there. So my kids got a lot of Disney in them at that time. And as I started getting older, and I was very involved in schools, and my creative side that I stifled for years, right? You know, I didn't sing, I didn't act, I didn't do those things. So my creative side came out, and I had the best Christmas parties in Honolulu, and everybody wanted to be invited to it. Cause I got very creative. It was themed. I did the black tie auction things for a school. So the creative side finds its way out, whether you want to put it down. And I would say that there came a point, and my girlfriend and I were going to start, and we did actually start a trunk business, and it was clothes for women who were, you know, in their late 30s, 40s that, hey, you know, you don't have to dress. You don't have to dress matronly. You can dress in stylish clothes and, you know, be in your 40s. And being once that I turned, I think I was more 39 going into being 40. I would walk Diamond Head with my girlfriend and I said to her, I can't do this anymore. And I said, I can't stay here. I said, I'm miserable in my marriage. I mean, and it looked to everyone else, it looked like the beautiful picture, you know, the house on the water, the boat, my daughters were dressed beautifully and my life looked perfect on the outside. It really did. And, but it wasn't, you know, I was miserable. And I married somebody that I shouldn't have married. And I think a lot of women put themselves in that position and either you stick with it or as I did, I said, you know, no more, I can't do this. And it was a very contentious divorce. It was horrible going through it. And all I was waiting, I would go to court and he would say, okay, she can go to New York because it's very hard to take your children out of a state that they were born in because they were all born there. And I said, no, I'm going to New York. And I had to wait for a judge to allow me to do that. And I did get that, but I still wasn't divorced. So but the biggest hurdle was for me to get back home. And I did. And I was a single mother and it was my choice. So I didn't think it was my desire to have a divorce, which he did not want. And that was the contentious part of it. Sure. And I wasn't, and I think he thought I would leave without my children and that was never going to happen. And then we went to New York and I bought my first house all by myself and my first car all by myself. And I got a job at IBM and I had a fantastic job there. So I was doing very well with a very good child support. In Hawaii, the ladies don't get alimony. They get a very small amount of alimony, but I was lucky to get good child support. And so that was a difficult time, but at the same time, and I say this to women all the time, when you reach your 40s, you know who you are. It's like the veil is lifted and you're like, okay, I know who I am. I know what I want to do. And it might be rough, but I am going to do me. I'm going to do that because I know who I am. I know I can do this. And I had a lot of women, friends from Hawaii who were just like, what are you doing? You know, why would you do this? You have the perfect life. And I said, you think I have the perfect life, but I don't. And and I had a friend who said to me, you make all of us now have to think about our relationships. And I said, that's on you. I said, you know, if you're not happy and my best friend, we went through divorces together. And when we would go to the kids' school, it was like we wore this scarlet letter. Nobody wanted to talk to us anymore because our husbands were very well known. They did a lot for the school and it was like, they didn't understand it. And, and I didn't need to have people approve. I had many phone calls of asking me to withdraw it. And I said, no, I'm not. And then, you know, being a single mother and at least I raised my daughters to a certain point where I felt that I could be the single mother that went to work. And, but I still went to, you know, the soccer games, the basketball games. And there's a sense of freedom, even though, when my divorce became final, I was just like, I didn't hate him anymore. I was like, I'm divorced from him. If he wants to come see the girls and he's in town, I don't care, because there was no romantic side to it for me anymore. So I was very open. And so that good for him. And I was, I would say I was single for about 5-6 years. And the stalker guy came back. All right. And I kept telling him, I said, I don't need you in my life. I said, I'm doing very well by myself and I'm not going to support you, because I think that's what he wanted. And, you know, I dated, but I wasn't, I had a girlfriend who would go on single weekends all the time and I would watch her daughters. I wasn't actively looking to date. It wasn't like I dated somebody who I thought was my friend's nephew. And that was, you know, good for a couple of months. I wasn't looking to get married. I wasn't looking for any of that. And executive VP, and I worked for two, because at IBM, they switch out their VPs a lot to move around. And I worked for a fantastic gentleman. I think people thought we were having an affair, actually, but we were very close. And he would ask me about my weekend, and I would say, well, I went to this club with somebody who worked with me. And I said, I just don't understand why, you know, nobody talks to me. And I said, and I had short hair at the time. And I said, do you think that they think I'm something else? And he said, no. And he explained it to me. He said, you know, you're an intimidating, and I didn't think this. He said, you're an intimidating woman. And men don't want to deal with that woman. They want to deal with your friend who's a little bit more, acceptable is not the word, but more obtainable. And he said, because you are intimidating. And I said, that's not true. I said, I'm very friendly. And he said, you don't know what men go through. Now this is an insight to men, ladies, that if you're out with your girlfriends and there's guys who are coming over to buy you drinks, if you're that woman, which I was, he said, if a guy asks you out and you turn him down, he said, we live with that for weeks, that we got turned down. And I said, oh, no. yes, we do. And I thought that was pretty enlightening. And I said, wow. I said, you know, just because you say no doesn't mean it's really no. Maybe it could be yes. I don't know. So he got me at the time. This was big. He put me on Match.com.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. He was like, I'm going to get you a subscription to Match.com. And I think for the first year it would come into my inbox and I would delete them. I just would like, I'm not interested. I didn't believe in online dating at all. And he left and I was working for, a woman executive vice president. And we had a phenomenal relationship. I would have to say the people in my life that I had the best work situations was always with women who mentored me to make me better. And I don't know why that is, but for me, that was the case. And we were very close. And one day she looked over my shoulder and she said, what is all this Match.com stuff? And I said, Michael, bought this for me. I said, I just delete them every day. And she said, well, open it up. I want to see the guy of the day. And I opened it up and it was a picture of my husband. And I said, oh, I said, okay. I said, he's not bad. And she was like, she would go to meetings, go to her office and say, did you ding him yet? Did you ding him? I said, no, I don't know if I want to do it. I don't know if I want to do it. I said, I just don't believe in this online dating. And I did it at 5 o'clock because she was just hammering me. And started to talk. And I think it was like 2.5 months before we actually met. He wanted a picture of me because I guess he had bad experiences of women putting pictures and then they were totally different in appearance. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, guy, I wear a 0 to 2 and I don't feel I need to give you a picture. And so I finally did. And we met and, you know, it started off being a nice relationship. My daughters who always said to me, we want you to meet somebody and be happy. But when it happened, they were not happy. They were not happy with a man intruding into a female PMS because there was four
kind
of us.
Surprised he was willing to do that. That's a treacherous situation to step into.
Right, exactly. And he had children. And his children were in foster care. And there was a lot of psychological issues going on with them. And it really put a very big strain on my marriage in the beginning. And it was hell. And then my ex-husband wanted to take my children away because he said I was an unfit mother, which was only because I think he always had this thought that I would go back to him. And once I got married, that illusion went away. And sure. I fought and fought and fought that I told my daughters, I will spend every last dime I have to fight this because, you know, and that's where your strength comes, where, you know, when somebody invades in trying to take your children, even if it's their father, it's like, no. I was the one who raised them. I was the one who carried them for 9 months. And no, and they had gone to visit him, which they didn't want to go to Hawaii for a long time to visit. And my oldest daughter was 18 at the time. And he tried to keep them. And his lawyer said, you got to send them back because she has custody. And because my oldest daughter was 18, I couldn't fight for her. It was like, I just kept telling her to get on a plane and come home. And she didn't. And that was, for me, a very hard thing to deal with. And mm-hmm. It was, and I didn't talk to her for 2 years because, you know, I said, how can you do this? And then I had a fight for the other two. So you think you're over it and then something else comes up that is devastating. And it did put me in a black hole, admittedly. It was the most depressing event in my life to have to go through that. And he had my daughters write these horrible things that to this day, I can't even look at them because it just brings back these, you know, and they said to me, you know, many years after, they said, you know, he made us write that. And I said, yeah. And as your mother reading it, saying that I wasn't a good mother was very hard for me to read. So, you know, got past that, and the relationships with my daughters and my husband, you know, were tough in the beginning, and then it leveled out, and things with his children were an issue, and it was always an issue I had to deal with on the side. There was never a point that we could mesh the family. There was no way. So it was, you know, his kids in a different place, and you know, they had, as I said, they had some mental issues, and one of them or two of them still have that. His son, thank God, went into the military, and he's a great kid. One of his daughters, who created a lot of havoc in my life, and has actually done some things that are so horrific, I wouldn't even talk about them. She is not in our life. I refuse to allow that in my life. And the other daughter is just, you know, she does have issues, but she works on them, and she's a sweet kid. So, but we don't see them that much. And so the families were never meshed, and we had a anniversary party, and two of my daughters were staying here, and his son and daughter. And I was thinking to myself, I don't know how this is going to go. This could go really bad. And I was happily surprised that the four of them got along, and they wanted to, they had fun with each other. And then, you know, one day they're like, can we take the car? And I said, yeah, but where are you guys going? And they're like, we want to go to Buc-ee's. Now, I don't know if you know what Buc-ee's is. It's big in Texas. We have a couple in Alabama. It's basically this huge gas station, truck stop, but the store is amazing. You could buy anything there. And they were obsessed with going to this place. And I was like, oh, the four of you are going? Okay. So there was a bright light there that finally, after all these years, the four of them could actually do something, and it was fun. And then if I get to where I am now, I started getting the stories that I have in my head. I've had in my head for over 25 years, and that's not an exaggeration. And I have the story that I wrote, or stories, because now it's several books, and I have three others, and they came to me as little black and white vignettes. And one day the story about rock music, because that was part of my life at one point, mm-hmm. became very clear. And I was cleaning my house, because I'm a clean freak, and I went into the shower, and the story just literally ran through me. It was like colors, and the characters had names, and everything became very clear to me. And I found my laptop, and I just started writing the story. And it did have a lot of different changes. And when I found my, and I knew I had to self-publish, because publishing companies don't look at first-time authors. You can hire a literary agent, and you'll spend a lot of money and still get told no. So the path is to self-publish. And I did deal with two very bad self-publishing companies. And I went on a website, and for anybody who's out there who wants to do this, there's a website called the Alliance of Self-Publishers. And it rates all these people with a green light, yellow light, red light. There's a lot of red lights. And there were a lot. And I dealt with two of them. And, you know, they just want to take like $15,000 and that's it. You know, you're stuck. So I interviewed, and there was seven of them. There was only seven green lights. And I interviewed every one of them. And it was actually between two. There was, and they were a publishing company. So I had to think that one out. And they were in Wales. And I did like them. And then it was the publishing consultant that I'm working with. And she's like, I'm going to guide you. And you're going to interview editors. You're going to interview. So she brought people for me to choose from. You know, who did you match with? Mm-hmm. So I did get them all together and found out that my one story was two books. So it was one book, and then the other one came fairly close. And it was enlightening because I never dreamed that I'd be doing it. And then once I started doing it, it was like, okay, this is what I was supposed to do. And I'm happy for it. It also is a significant change in my family life. I will admit to that. Over the last 3 or 4 years, I can't remember, I went on the keto diet. I lost 80 pounds. I changed my hairstyle, and my daughters were like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah, that's a lot of changes.
Right. Mom, what's going on in your head? And I said, I'm writing these books. And, I said, I do want to be famous. I do want the stories to be out there. And I have three others. And I said, I'm not doing this to say I'm a published author. I'm doing it because I want them to be big. Do I think that my series would be perfect to be put on as a TV show? Absolutely. So they're like, you're going down this path, and we don't know if we don't want our life out there like you do. And I said, well, you don't need to be. So I scrubbed all my social media so that there's no pictures of my daughters or any, you know, my granddaughter. My daughter's like, don't put up pictures of, you know, and I respect that. You know, I do respect that they don't want to be in whatever mom's doing right now, because if mom takes off, guaranteed those girls will be liking mom a little bit better, because maybe mom is going to help us out a little bit, which is a big, so, and then that changed my marriage relationship sort of, because again, you know, you go through all these physical changes that you change your body. And, you know, I've been very frank with my family that I probably will get a facelift and, you know, do things to make myself appear. And they just don't understand it. And it's okay if they don't understand it. I just tell them, look, you're either with me or you cannot be with me. I just don't need you to tell me to stop doing, you know, because there have been times when they're like, what are you doing? You need to stop. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. And I think my husband feels a little insecure now because there are shows that you go to, and there have been times when I've gone by myself, and I do have a best friend who will pick up, and I did Portland, and my two of my daughters live in Portland, Oregon, and that's where my granddaughter is. So anytime I can get to go to Portland, I'm there. And I know it's a very strange vibe, but I love the Portland vibe. I don't know. It's just, I just have a good time there. And, you know, I would love to live there. The other person who lives in this house is not that excited about that. And I do have one daughter. My youngest daughter is still in New York. She's in Brooklyn. So I did the Brooklyn Book Festival. I did a bunch of book festivals, and my girlfriend was like, on her own dime, flew in, stayed at a hotel, and was there for me. And I'm trying to get into what is probably better for me. There are these romance conventions, and trust me, there are a lot of them, and there's like 1,000 to 2,000, depending on the convention, that go, and that's my audience. So,
so yeah, you, now that you've gotten to that point, so let's talk about, sure. You know, the types of books, the types of stories. I think, it's kind of been insinuated, but I don't think this is a truthful insinuation that these books are based from your life. They're fictional books, right? They're not nonfiction.
They are fictional, but I will say, and I tell people this, that the main female character is a lot like me. There are events that happened to me. There are things that were said to me. And it's a very weird situation now that when I'm writing and I'm editing book three, right? And I have other books written already that when I'm behind the computer and I'm writing her, she has my characteristics. She is me in a sense. And there are true parts of my life that I put in there. And I always tell people, if you want to know what is true, read my books, and you can send me a message on social media, on my website. And I don't have an issue with telling somebody what is true and what's not true. The premise in the first book is, and this absolutely did not happen to me, so there it is fictional, but she's in her own rock band, and I did go to this place, Glen Island Casino, every Tuesday in the summer, and she sees this man, and she's in a band with her cousin, and her cousin says, you know, what's wrong with you? There's guys who are crazy for you and you're not interested. And she said, I haven't found the man that I want to be with yet. And she's there visiting her friends, which are loosely based on my friends, loosely, I'll say that. And she sees this guy and she thinks he's beautiful. And the way I describe him is the way I would have described the man that I would have liked to have been with. So there's those kinds of things that I put in there. Like, he is what I would have liked. And so they see each other, and they both have this instant connection. It's just, it is electric. And she takes him home that first night, ooh, you know, that's what we did back then. And they fall in love like immediately. And it's, so that did not happen to me, obviously. Maybe wishful thinking on my part, but it did not happen to me. So it is fiction. And as I said, I do pepper it with things in my life, things that were said to me, things that I did. And I'm always happy to tell people that. And the background of the female character, her father is very wealthy and he owns construction and construction building, all that. And they're very wealthy, but he also has other businesses that you don't talk about.
Yeah. And I think whenever anybody is writing, whether we do it intentionally or unintentionally, parts of our own life and experiences make their way into the book, because I just imagine, you know, that's just how it works. And like I said, I think for some people it's unintentional, but I don't know. Maybe that's just me, because my book is all, you know, it's like 10 little mini biographies. And one of them is mine, but you know, I feel like experiences are going to play into a book, whether it's truly a fiction or a nonfiction book. And so I appreciate that, you have the two books and you have generously offered for one of the viewers of this episode to win a copy, either an ebook copy or a paperback copy of either Playing Hard or Playing High, book one or book two of the Perfection Saga series. And the way that people can do that and enter into that is you can like this episode either on Facebook or on YouTube, share it on Facebook or YouTube, and then in either the thread on Facebook or YouTube, put in hashtag no limits so that I know that you are interested in winning this copy of this book. And then I usually go till the Sunday from when the episode is aired. So this Sunday would be, and I do this all the time, I forget to check what the actual date would be. I think it will be the 25th of May, 25th of May, 25. And so if you're interested in receiving a copy of her book, be sure to do those three things: like it, share it, and put hashtag no limits in one of the comment areas, either on YouTube or Facebook. And then I'll draw a name out next Monday so that everybody has a chance to put their information in on Sunday. And one of the things, just really quickly, that I wanted to bring up is you have written this series later on in life while dealing with lupus, PTSD,
yes,
and anxiety.
Yes.
Any one of those things is probably difficult enough. Really quickly, because we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left in the episode. I think most people understand in general PTSD and anxiety, but I don't feel that a lot of people have a knowledge of what lupus is. Would you describe what it is and how it affects you specifically?
There's two different forms, and there's one form that centers on like your kidneys, your liver, your internal organs. I do not have that. I have muscular skeletal, and I have Raynaud's, I have fibromyalgia, I have RA. What lupus is doing to me is attacking my joints, my hands. I have very poor motor skills on my hands. I always have scissors or workarounds. I don't use buttons. I try not to let it debilitate me, but there are times when, like sitting in a car, I need to get out after 2.5 hours. Otherwise, my hips get, you know, so it keeps you from kind of doing things. But I do take really good medication, and it's all neuropathy. It's all your nerves. It's your joints. And I'm lucky that not lucky to have lupus. A doctor one time told me lupus is the garbage can of autoimmune diseases because it's all of them together. And sometimes one takes over more than the other one. Is it the fibro? Is it the rheumatoid arthritis? So is it the scleroderma on your hands? So, and I have never gotten out of, what do they say? When you don't have it, remission. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. I've never not been in remission. I think because I have had a stressful life, so it's there. But if you are on the mindset that I am not going to let this disease, which a lot of people don't understand. And like I said, there are two forms, like Nick Cannon and I think Selena Gomez have lupus, but it affects their kidneys. And I just did a blood panel. I go every other month, they take all this blood and, you know, my kidney functions, everything's good. So for me, it's my body hurting. I will say that the one thing that does help, I work out every day for either 40 or 90 minutes. So it does help a little bit with, you know, sticking, whatever. For some people, it can hold you back. I didn't know what was wrong with me for years. And I kept taking the test. And I remember I did a blood panel and I went to my rheumatologist and I said, oh boy, they found something. And she looked at me and she said, because it takes a while for it's called the ANA to come through. And she said, the test for lupus was positive. And I said, thank you very much. Because I was going years not knowing what was wrong with me. And because you look fine, right? On the outside, people don't know. But when you see my hands, right? My hands are always swollen. I've had carpal tunnel surgery. I probably need to do it again. But I don't let it affect me that way. I am like, I'm going to, and I know that there are things that I want to do and it's like, maybe I can't do that. But like I said, I have workarounds. I did want to say one thing to you. If somebody chooses the paperback, and we'll figure out how we do that. If they choose a paperback, I am happy to send them a book plate, which I will sign and they can put inside the book. So they will have a signed copy of my book.
Okay.
I'm happy to, I mean, it's a stamp. So right. I'm happy to do that if somebody wants a paperback.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you very much for that. And thank you for sharing your story with myself and my audience today. You have a very long and sordid kind of a history. You know, there was a lot of bumps and twists and turns, and I appreciate you being willing to share that with me today. So guys, if you're interested, again, let me put up the how to win the book, or a chance at winning the book is you subscribe to the YouTube channel, share the episode on YouTube or Facebook, and then comment hashtag no limits either in the comment thread on Facebook or YouTube. And then that will go through Sunday, May 25th, and on Monday, May 26th, then I will draw from the names who have fulfilled all three requirements. And Beth, it's been a pleasure to have you today. I thank you again so much. And yes, to everybody else, make sure that you like and subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. And remember, we know who we are, but not who we will be. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Bye, Shelley.
Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.